following Dafyomi recording begins with today's daf from the 13th International Cycle. It's followed by a very fast review of the daf that allows you to listen to the whole daf within 5 to 10 minutes. That's followed by exactly the same daf at greater length, deeper explanations, and with a completely different group of people, either from the previous 12 cycle or even the 11th, and sometimes even the 10th. Today's daf in Masechet Sukkah, brought to you by Beit Chomot Yerushalayim, is daf Hey, and we're holding out of Dalit Amud Beit at the last of the two lines. Sheina Gavua Hasara Tvachim, six lines up from the bottom. So we learned that the minimum size of the Sukkah is 10 Tvachim. Minal, how do we know that? Now, it's interesting because remember before Rava said that it's a Diras Rucha, anyway, you know. But that is not necessarily the shear of the sukkah, because over there were things that were banging you on the head when you would stand up. Maybe that makes it the diras ruha, the leaves that are sticking down the matam yasara. But the fact that the building itself should be the matam yasara, you know, maybe it's like one of these Japanese airline hotels, you know, where you sort of get in there. It's not asara. You know, you crawl in, close the door, and it's just a bed. That's really it. Yeah, it's really like that. They stack them like 10 up. Yeah, that way it's only $100 a night, like this.
Sounds like something. Yeah.
Anyway, so now the Gemara wants to say, no, Itmar Rav, Rabbi Hanina, Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Chaviva, Mato. Oh, by the way, just so you should know, those names are not necessarily accurate, because that particular group of four that used to learn together a lot, and we often find their Ma'amorim together, there are those who throughout Seder Moed change the name of Rabbi Yochanan to Rabbi Yonatan, because according to the other version, he was the one who had joined that Kabura for Moed, and Rabbi Yochanan was out. But anyway, it was four, whether the fourth one was Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yonatan is a matter of different Amoraim. And this is where they learned it from. They said, look, we know that the Aron was Tisha. The Aron was an Amma V'chetzi. Amma V'chetzi is assuming that the Amma 6 Tvachim, which we're going to talk about later, gives us 9 Tvachim for Amma V'machza. The Kaporet adds another Tefach, which is exactly 10, right? Arekan Asara. Now, as we know, Uchtiv no'adati l'chasham v'dibarti itcha mi'al ha'kaporet. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us he's going to be speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu from above the kaporet, mi'ben shnei ha'chuvim, ashel aron ha'idot. Sounds rather familiar. We're sort of Ozek in that sugya right now. And we know from Rabbi Yossi, that we have a Kabbalah, that mi'olam lo yada shechina l'mata, that actually the shechina never came down to the earth. And it's a myth to think that Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the Shamayim, or that Eliyahu went up to the Shamayim. Never happened. He says it this way just to really get our, you know, what? V'lo ala Moshe v'Eliyahu l'morom. Shenemra ha-Shamayim, Shamayim la-Hashem, v'yazotam v'vnei Adam. So that means God has no right to come down, man has no right to go up. Different rishuyas. Ask the Gemara, what? V'lo yarda shechina l'mata? I thought that's the whole Har Sinai thing, no? And that was supposed to be the Mishkan. That's the Vinoadity. The same Yerida that was on Har Sinai was into the Mishkan. So what we have to say is that it was Lamala Miasara. In other words, since it was Miala Kaporet, and we've just shown that that means it was above 10 Tvachim from the ground, it's clear that 10 Tvachim defines a different Rishut, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu never came down to the earth, and therefore it's a different rishus. And what about Vachtiv Amdura Glav Bayom Ahu Al Har HaZeitim? What about the fact that Bimot HaMashiach, as Zechariah describes it, that Kivayochel HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be standing on Har HaZeitim, and it will break open, and we'll have that big earthquake, and so on and so forth. So how do we explain? It says Vayered Amdura Glav. That means Amdura Glav L'malo Mi'asar Tvachim. And how do you explain the fact that it says Moshe Allah Elo Elohim? It means Lamata Me'asara. But it says Vayal Eliyahu B'Sara HaShamayim. It means Lamata Me'asara. So in other words, there is a concept of a different rishus, which is defined by the idea of asara tvachim, which we understand from here. Obviously, doesn't help much to apply asara tvachim in our local three-dimensional space, but the idea is the same.
What is the idea?
Whatever. The idea is it's a different rishus. It's possible to define a separate rishus within the same space, even though it can't be mamish on the same level. The Malam Yasar is a different rishus, so it doesn't share it with Bnei Adam.
It just means that you can't go from one to the other?
Oh, that's on Shabbos, maybe. I mean, it's a different space. Mm-hmm. Same thing on Shabbos. One rishus sayachit to another rishus sayachit, rishus sayachit to another. Each one is a rishus. So Asarat Tvachim defines that rishus. If Asarat Tvachim, it becomes rishus sayachit, right? No. You can go as high as you want, but you could only come within Asarat Tvachim of the Shamayim. Now that might require a trillion light years minus Asarat Tvachim. That's all. The middle space between Asarat Tvachim Me'al Ha'aretz and up to Asarat Tvachim L'matam and Hashamayim is no man's land. Anybody can go there. So the Shekhinah can come there. Adam can go up there. That's okay. We can share that space. But the Aretz itself is B'nai Adam. Okay? Please, stop getting worried about this thing. The whole thing is a remez B'alma, but it's a remez, the concept of separate spaces, and since within the Mishkan, that separate space is defined by a sort of talking of local space, so Mimela, we have the din of Sukkah, even though Sukkah is also a spiritual construct, but its physical presence is learned from the Aron and the Kaparet. So it's learned from the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the question is that it says when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to get the Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu forced him to answer the Malach HaSharis. Malach HaSharis said, "My Anoshki Tiskerenu," you remember the whole question. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, "But I'm scared of them, they're going to burn me up with the Eish, the PM." And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "Hold on to Kisei HaKavod and answer." And we have as a marker in the Pasuk the actual words. It says, "Me'achez v'nei Kisei, parshez alav anano." So Eov describes the Kisei HaKavod being spread out over Moshe. And what's that word, parshe? He's never heard of that word. Rabbi Tanchum says that it's actually a notrikum, and it stands for Pirej Pei, the Ziv Shechinato Va'anano Alav. So that's parshe, Pirej. And that means that apparently Moshe was standing there wherever he was, and the Kisei was there. If the Kisei was there, then Kadosh Baruch Hu was sitting on it. Yes, but it was Lamata Miyasara. Yeah, but it says he held it. Ma'achez b'nei Kisei. It had to have been in his same space. Well, the Kisei extended itself, but that was, it was only the Kisei. It wasn't the actual presence of the Shechina. And then Moshe Rabbeinu was able to hold on to it. It's a different thing. Malachim, it could be, have a right that could be sent anywhere, you know. You can send them down here too. No, they come visit Avram, you know, all over the place. Next time you're visited, ask. So, Bishlama, by the way, you sort of slipped one by us, you know, by saying that there's Asura Tvachim. It doesn't say anywhere how high the Kaparet was. So how did you know that? I mean, I understand that the Aron was Tisha, because that's in Fresh Pasuk. It says, V'yasu Aron atzei shitim, ma'matayim v'chitzi yakov, ma'ma v'chitzi rochbo, ma'ma v'chitzi komato, which gives us an amma of 6, plus a chitzi of 3 is 9. But where do we get the idea that the Kaporet is a tefach? It never says anything about the height of the Kaporet. It only talks about the width and the length of the Kaporet. Minolem, Tetani Rabbi Chanina, Kol HaKelim Sha'asam Moshe, everything else that the Moshe Rabbeinu made, the Torah gave us. Natna b'em haTorah midat orchan, midat rochvan, midat komatam. All three dimensions were mentioned. But the Kaporet was only given to us with midat orchan and midat rochva, yes, natna. However, it conspicuously leaves out midat komatam. So how do we know how high the kaporet was that allows us to say it was one tefach and derive the din of asar tefachim for the sukkah? Well, say ulmad mipachot shebekelim. Where is the smallest shiur that is given for a kli's height? That is the misgeret of the shulchan. So it says over there, v'asita lo misgeret tefach. It's the smallest thing. So if the tefach qualifies as a shiur, the minimal shiur for kli that we find, so therefore, mala halan tefach, afkan tefach. So because of that, we learn it from the misgeret. But why learn it from the misgeret? I mean, the misgeret is not really the kli, it's just like a piece of a kli. So why don't we learn it from the kelim themselves, the full size of a kli, and then we'd have a much taller kaporet? Well, that's because of Occam's razor. Tafasta meruba lo tafasta. Tafasta mua tafasta. You only have a right to make the minimal supposition. So, as Rashi says, if you grab, it's like a common saying. If you grab more than you can absolutely prove, then you're going to lose it, because you're going to have to be able to show and prove that this is yours. But if you take the absolute minimum, at least you have it, because that, everybody has to agree, is indeed yours. And essentially, the Gemara's framing of Occam's razor. Titania. Ask the Gemara, but why not use the tzitz? The tzitz is less than a tefach. So let's run out of the tzitz. Titania. Tzitz domek mitas shel zahav. So it was a flat piece of gold, and it was two etzpaot wide. And it went from ear to ear. The ketuv alav shnei shitim had two lines of writing on it. Yud hey milamala, which was not really yud hey, but we don't want to say all of the otiot of the four letter of the shem, because it's like being hogea shem bi otiot, perhaps.
So it's four letters.
It was four letters, but yud hey milamala and kodesh lamed milamata. And that's many different shitas, whether this was literal, one on top of the other, or the Kodesh Lamed was written to the right, and then the writing popped up to the upper line, and said the Yudke Vavke on the upper line. Different shitas. There's other shitas as well, but this is just a suggestion here. In any event, Rebbe Eliezer, Rebbe Yossi, if you recall, had that whole weird story where he was called in, and there was they needed to avert the Gezeira against Klal Yisrael, and he sent the shade Ben Tamali on the head, went into the daughter of the Caesar, and they were going crazy, and he was the only one who could save her. And in the great thanks of saving his daughter, little knowing that he was the one that made her save, so in the great saving of his daughter, he was given the reshus to go into the Vatican and to go into all of the various treasuries, and he found that Gezeira and ripped it up, and that's what he took. But meanwhile, he got a chance to look around. Lots of people give their right arms to look around. I mean, Barnea, Vatican is now Barnea's neighborhood, but still, there are those hidden catacombs. And Rabbi Yossi said, when I was there in Rome, Anira Yitiv Baromi, look, I don't know, I saw the tzitz, and I don't know about you guys, but it said Kodesh Lashem on one line. So, that's archaeological evidence. But we obviously don't care too much about that.
Anyway, mentioned I was invited to the Vatican.
Yes. I wasn't joking when I said it was going to be his memory. Anyway, so why don't we learn it out from the tzitz? Danim kli mi kli ve'en danim kli mi takshit. Look, you want to learn out the shear of a kaporet. Does it make sense to learn it out from one of the kelim? Or does it make sense to learn it from a decoration on the kli? Obviously, we should learn out of a kli. Okay, fine. Then there's something that is less than a tefach mikli. How about the zer? Okay? So where we have the zer of the Orion, or the zer of the Mizbach HaKtoret, and the zer is a marshal. So the Omer Mar, zer marshal. Yeah, but the zer is only decorative. It's not really part of the kli. It do perfectly well without a zer. So danim kli mikli, ve'in danim kli mehechsha kli, something to make it look more beautiful. Well, wait a minute. So then what about the miskeret? You said we're learning out of the miskeret of the Shulchan. The miskeret of the Shulchan is a tefach. Now, happens to be that there's a big machlokas about where the miskeret of the Shulchan is. So, assuming that the miskeret of the Shulchan is essentially a zer, and it's on top of the Shulchan, then it's no different than the zer. So why would we learn out of the zer? We love the same question. Ah, answers the Gemara, because obviously he holds that Misgarto Lamata Aita. He's going, according to Mandy Omer, we're going to speak in a moment, that the Misgarto of the Shulchan ran from leg to leg, and the top of the Shulchan was placed on the Misgarto. It wasn't decorative. It was the base of the flat top of the Shulchan. Okay, but then it only works out according to Mandy Omer. Hanecha Lamandi Omer Misgarto Lamata Aita, so it's very nice. But what about according to the Mandi Amar, who says, Mizgarto Lamala Haita, my Ikala Meimar? What are you going to tell me? It's no different than learning it out of the other Zerim, and they were smaller. So if you apply Tafasta Murupa Lo Tafasta, you should only have a Kapara that is a Mashu. Who's to say that it's a Tefa? Hi, Hakshar Kliyam. Okay, you're right. Fine. I changed my mind. The reason that I learned it from the Mizgarat is because Danin Davar Shenatna Bo Torah Midah, Shmi Davar Shenatna Bo Torah Midah. Look, there's two out of three dimensions that are mentioned here in the Kaporet. There are no dimensions that are given in the Torah on the Tzitz. It makes more sense to learn a third dimension out of a Kli that dimensions are given for a Kli that had two dimensions given. But it doesn't make sense. Al Yochichu Tzitz, or the Zer, where the Torah gave no dimensional coordinates at all. Lona Babema Torah Midakla. That's how I know it. So far, our first approach over here with Rebbe, Reb Chanina, Reb Yonatan, Reb Yochanan, and Reb Chaviva is that we learn the Shir of a Sukkah from the height of the Shechina that spoke from above the Kaporet.
A Zer? It's come out of the Zer and the Misgarot are two different things?
According to that man, Yama. I mean, according to everybody, it's two different things. The question is whether essentially Misgarot serves as a Zer. If you're Misgarot Lamata Haita, then the Zer of the Shulchan was not the Misgarot per se, but a piece that jutted up above the actual Shulchan. Right, so that was a decorative thing. That didn't have that meat of the Tefach. The Tefach was underneath to support the Shulchan. The Zer of the Shulchan was Keter Malchut. By the way, I may even have a picture. I just realized there's a lot of... I have color pictures, sorry. No. Sorry, but you are no longer... You're passé. Let's see, where are we? Here we go. Yes.
Well, look at that.
So here is the Misgarot with the Zer of the Misgarot on top. See, that's the way the Gemara is going now.
Bottom.
So we're learning, no, top. The Misgarot is at the bottom.
No, well,
I'm
pointing
to it. Yeah, the Misgarot is at the bottom of the...
Maybe he's using it as a tzitz.
The Misgarot is on the bottom of the flat tabletop, right? And then above the flat tabletop is the Zer that sticks out of the Misgarot. But the Tefach is for the Misgarot per se, in this level.
What do you mean that the Misgarot is above? That's below. Picture below right at the table?
This was the picture below. This is the picture above.
So the Misgarot is a frame above.
Right, that frame above.
Frame.
Above.
So where's the Zer in that picture?
And then the Misgarot becomes the Zer, according to Amandu. Oh, because that's sticking entirely above the Zer. Thanks for saving me.
Did you feel cheated? The Zer and the Misgarot are the same thing.
You don't understand. He's planning a career as a Mashiach. This is his show.
It's a weird one.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, I'll try to include those pictures for the people online. Ships at sea, yes. All right, so that's approach number one. Rav Huna says, I have a different approach. I say we can learn it out from the word al pnei ha-kaporet. Now that implies that the kaporet has to have a face, so to speak. And ein panim pachot mitefach. The minimal size human face is one tefach. Well, what do you mean? Who's to say that it's a human face? Maybe it's a face of the Bar Yochani. You know, the Bar Yochani was like 400 stories high, you know. That was the bird that laid the egg that buried 60 different cities. Anyway, whatever. I mean, how do you know it's a human face? Well, it's the old story. Tafasta merubah lo tafasta. Tafasta mu'at tafasta. That's the answer, right? We look to the minimum. Well, if you're looking to the minimum, maybe it's a little birdie face. I mean, how do you know it's not a hummingbird? Ka'ape de tziparta. So then it would be just like a tiny marshal, you know, etzpa. The zutar tuva. Om Rav Acha bar Yaakov, the truth is that Rav Huna is not learning it from the idea of a minimal face. He's learning it from Exera Shava. It says Pnei HaKaparet, and it also says Me'et Pnei Yitzchak Aviv. So he learns out Pnei, Pnei. K'tiv Acha, Pnei HaKaparet, u'k'tivata Me'et Pnei Yitzchak Aviv. Well, I mean, why not learn it out from a bigger point than that? What about the Malach, you know, that was fighting Yaakov, if you know, over there? It also says Pnei. It says Kirot Pnei Elohim Vatirtzeni. Well, again, Tafasta Murubalo Tafasta. Tafasta Mua Tafasta. Well, maybe it's the size of the face of the Kruvim. Tachtiv Ela Kaparet Yu Pnei HaKruvim. Om Rav Acha bar Yaakov. Whoops, it is. How do you like that? Actually, we have a Kabbalah that the Pnei HaKruvim are a minimal size of a tefach. And that's where he was learning from. Not from Yitzhak Avinu, but rather from the Kruv. What is the meaning of Kruv? Om Rebbe Abohu, it's Kiravya, like a child. She came Bebovel, Korim Lianuka Ravya. In Bovel, they call babies Ravyas. So Kiravya would be like a child, even though it's from Bansa, it's Narim, but it's the same idea. Omele Abaya, wait a minute. So then how do you explain the four different faces on the Chayot of the Merkava, where it says one of them was the face of a Kruv, and the other was a face of a human? That's the same thing. Now you're saying a Kruv is a human, right? So Hainu Kruv, Hainu Adam. True. But one is a big face, and one's a little face. And that, of course, is the whole Kabbalistic idea of the what we were talking about, of a Zeir Anpin and Arich Anpin, which are the different Ramazan in the Merkava. Now, this is a nice limit, except for one problem. The limit is based on the fact that you have 10 tefachim. What you're saying over here is you've got 10 tefachim, al pnei hakaparet kedma, and that would mean that we're learning it out from the standing orin and the kaparet. So that would mean when you're looking at a sukkah, you should be looking at something which is a minimum of 10 tefachim, but it would include its kaparet, which is the tzach. In other words, how do you know that it means that the empty space has to be 10 tefachim? Maybe the sukkah has to be 10 tefachim, which is you'd be taking some of that space up. So then who's to say that the chalala is asara bar mischacha? Who's to say the empty space up until the schach is 10 tefachim? Maybe with the schach, just like the aron and the kaparet is the whole thing, the sukkah is 10 tefachim. So this is not a very good limud at all, the whole idea of learning it out of that size. Right you are. Okay, let's change that. Let's learn it out of the actual word of schach, which is really interesting. Believe it or not, we finally realized that the kruvim, it's amazing how we got to this at last, are sochachin bechanfeyem. What an amazing coincidence. So they are the Torah's definition of schach. And they are sochachin bechanfeyem over the top of the kaparet, right? And I can prove to you that their wings must have been above, right above 10 tefachim, above the kaparet. How can I prove that to you? Well, let's take a look at the Beit HaMikdash. By the Beit HaMikdash, it says that Shlomo HaMelech built these kruvim, right? Now the bayit, Asher Bana HaMelech HaShlomo LaHashem, was Shishim Amot Orko, Esrim Orochubo, V'Shloshim HaMakamoto. So it was 30 Amot high. And there, when it describes the kruvim that he made, it says, Komata kruva echad, eser ba'ama. Each one of these kruvim were 10 amot high. That's an enormously high thing, right? V'chena kruva sheni. But we have to prorate this for Mishkan size, right? So it's the kruv in the Beit HaMikdash. Obviously, everything that Shlomo HaMelech did was based on the original vision of these things in the Mishkan.
Proportional.
So now, if we prorate it, all right, so then 10 amot is one-third of the total height of the bayit, because it just said that the bayit was shloshim, correct? Shloshim amakamato. So that means ma matzino, and this is the bride actually says this, ma matzino bebeit olamim kruvim b'shlisha bayetayin amdim, just like in the Beit HaMikdash, we are given a description of the height of the kruvim, and their relationship is to the bayit. So one-third up the way of the bayit. That's how tall they are. Mishka nami b'shlisha bayetayin amdim. That would mean that the kruvim also have to be as high as one-third of the olam. Now, how high was the olam? Well, we know the olam moed was made of krashim that were eser amot. So mishkan kamahavi eser amot, because it says eser amot was the length of a keresh, and the length of a keresh became the height of the mishkan when it was put together. So that means that you have a total of how many tvachim? Kamahavi lo. How many tvachim are there in 10 amot of 6 tvachim apiece? 60. So you've got shitin pushchi. Take one-third of that in order to get the height of the groove. Tilte, one-third, kamahave, esrim pushchi. So that gives you 20 tvachim. Now we've already proven that under the groove, under the wings of the groove, there was the Oren and the Kaporet, which were 10 tvachim. That we've already gone through. Pashaluhu asarap. You now have 10 tvachim between the height of the kruv and the foot of the kruv. And it says, Beferish, hayu hakruvim porsechen afayim lemala, sochechin bechanfeyem ala kaporet. Now that means that the Torah is calling schach, in this case, that which is 10 tvachim above the space beneath it. Well. So therefore, we now know that tzchach has to be 10 tvachim. But wait, I have the same problem here too. How do we know that the wings are not included in the measurement? In other words, how do we know that the wings of the kruv go above the head level? Maybe the wings of the kruv are included in the total measurement of the kruv up until Asarat Tvachim, which would mean that, once again, I have the same problem. Let's include the schach in the 10 tvachim of the sukkah instead of having the schach above 10 tvachim of the sukkah. So, Mamad, the gut, finu, ilire, shayu, kaime, who's to say that their wings went above their headspace? Dilmalahadere, shayu, kaime. Omer of Achav, Yaakov, that's why it says lamala. So, when you got lamala means above their head level. Well, so then if that's the case, maybe the wings extended up for another 30 tvachim. I don't know. I mean, who's to say now we're back to our original problem? How do you know 10 tvachim? So, ema demid le'tuva. Because again, it doesn't say lamala lamala. The Torah comes to define. And therefore, it's telling you take the next step up. The next step up is that the wings are above the number that was just given. So that means underneath the wings, you'll have the 10. Now, this is all very nice if an ama is 6 tvachim. But that's a machloket, because we know we have 3 different amot, actually 4 different amot in the Beit HaMikdash. So we have the ama of chamisha tvachim, which the mocker of which is in this, today's haftarah, ama v'tofah, that we learned out earlier, if you recall, the Olimud, that there is an Amma that includes an Amma plus a Tefach. So that means there's one Amma that's minus that Tefach. A five Tefach Amma, a 6 Tefach Amma, and remember we had the other Amma on top of Shushan HaBirah, where it was larger, and there was another one even more large, that was meant to measure the output of workmen so they wouldn't overcharge the base. I mean, they had to accept that they were measured to a higher standard. And anyway, according to Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Meir, all amot were the middle amma being 6 tvachim. But what about according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says, well, the amma of the binyan, things that were built, like the Mishkan, yes, that was 6 tvachim. But the orin, which was a kli, anything that was part of the kelim, was only 5 tvachim. So now the whole thing breaks down. What are you going to say now? The orin, okay, is what? 1 amma and a half. Yeah, but the amma is only 5, which means that's only 7 and a half. And the kaporet is another tefah, but that's 8 and a half, not 10. Right? And the kruvim haven't changed, because the kruvim still have to be at 20, because they're learned out bishli shabbat. They're not, nothing to do with the size of the... So then that would mean that a sukkah would have to be 11 and a half, right, to make up the difference. So if that's the case, Michael Amemar, Aron v'kapora together kamahave, 8 and a half, Tvanya Palgo. You're left with 11 and a half, according to which It's a partial chatzrei v'palga, according to which we should say that a sukkah has to be a minimum of 11 and a half tvachim. How come it doesn't say that in the Mishnah? So there's got to be another makor, according to Rabbi Yehuda, for why a sukkah would be asarat tvachim. So im a sukkah ad havi chatzrei v'palga, you are right. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we have lost our makor. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, indeed, how do we know how high a sukkah is? Only as a halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, and it's one of the shiurim given in the Torah, mi halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai. Hilchata gemiralah. The Amar Bichia Barav Amar Rav. You should know that the shiurim that are given in the Torah to various things, we're going to discuss tomorrow all of what those shiurim are, and the din of chatzitzin for tefillah, we're going to discuss what those are tomorrow, and mechitzin, the halachas of a mechitza, which we've been playing with here, you know, the good achit, the good asig, the dofen akuma, the love, so on and so forth, all those things are halacha l'moshe mi-sinai to be continued. V'she'ena gvoa asarat tfachim inolon. Itma, Rav, Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chaviva, Matno, by the way, the Kula Seder Moed, Koki, Haizuga, Chiluf, Rabbi Yochanan, Maile, Rabbi Yonatan, Aron, Tisha, Vekapora, Tefach, Harikan, Asara. And it says, Venuada, Tilcha, Shamadi, Barti, Kamayala, Kapor. And we know that from a bright to the Rabbi Yossi Omer, the Olam, Lo Yarda, Shekhina, Lamata, Velo, Alum, Moshe, Velio, Lamaron. Shemra Shemaim Shemaim Lashem Yoretz Natan Livnei Adam V'lo Yardash Kina Lamata V'achti V'yered Hashem Al Har Sinai Nebisu Ma'ala Me'asar Tvachim V'achti V'yamdur Aglav B'yom Bo'o Al Har Zaitim Ma'ala Me'asar Tvachim V'lo Alu Moshe V'lo Yom Lamoram V'achti U'Moshe Ala Elo Elohim Lamata Me'asar V'achti V'yale Liyo B'sara Shemaim Lamata Me'asar V'achti Ma'achis B'nei Kisei Parshaz Ala V'anano V'yom Rabbi Tanchum Malamed Shepirei Sadai Miziv Shekhinato v'anano alav. That was a matter of me, Asura. But it says, Ma'achis, b'nei kisei. It's in his face. Ishtarvu v'ishtarvu v'nei kisei. Ad Asura v'nokat v'nei. So be shloma aron tishat echivi asua aronat zishitim ha-matayim v'chetzi okov v'amah v'chetzi rohbo v'amah v'chetzi komato ala kapore tefach min olam t'toni rev chanina kol ha-kelim sh'asa Moshe natna b'em Torah midat orchan, midat rohban, midat komatan kaporet midat orchan, midat rohban natna midat komatan lo natna tzei lomad b'pochot sh'pekevim sh'nemer v'yasito lo b'zgeret tefach saviv ma'al ha'la tefach afkan tefach. Why not learn out mikelim gufayim? Because tafasta mu'a, v'lo tafasta, tafasta mu'a, tafasta. Well, if you're looking for mu'a, t'nelef mi tzitz. The tanya tzitz to make me tashal zavrach avol nishtei atzbaot, u'mukaf mi ozen ozen, v'katuv alav shnei shitim, yudei milamala, v'kodesh lamed milamata, v'yomer abelozer b'yosi, aniri itiv baromi, v'katuv alav kodesh lashem, b'shitachat. Anyway, that's because we don't learn it out from the tzitz, because done in kli mikli, ain't done in kli mitachshit. Okay, so learn it out from the zer. Do you remember the zer is only a mashal? Maybe because done in kli mikli, ain't done in kli mihechsher kli. Well, and the misgaret. Misgaret was also hechsher kli. No, misgaret olamata ita. And what if you don't hold that? Misgaret olamata ita. But what about according to misgaret olamala ita? Michael amema. I actually clear. Okay, so I have to say, done in Davar Shenat Nabo Torah Mida, Midavar Shenat Nabo Torah Mida, Vayochich Tzitz Vezer Shulonat Abem Torah Mida Klal. Revun Amar Miocha Al Pnei Hakaporet Kedma Vein Panim Pachot Mitefa. Maybe it means Kaapi Debar Yuchne. Tafasta Murubalot Tafasta Tafasta Mua Tafasta Ve'ema Kaapi De Tziparta De Zuta Tuva. Amar Vachba Yaakov. In reality, Revun is learning out Pnei from Pnei. It says over here, al pnei hakaporet, uchtivata me'et pnei Yitzchak Aviv. Why not learn it out from the Malach that was fighting with Yaakov Aminu, where it says, kirot pnei Elohim v'tirtzeni, because tafasta brubalot tafasta, tafasta mu'at tafasta, v'nelech bikruv, t'chtiv el hakaporet, yu pnei hakruvim, om revach b'yakov, that is, actually that's where he learns it from. Gemiri, em pnei kruvim, p'chuti b'tefa, yes, revuna nami miyochag, om here, my kruv, om Rabbi Abu, ki Ravya, shkein babovo korim, liyanuka Ravya. Wait a minute, I'm like, so then if that's the case, we're missing a face on the Merkava. Me'ata tichti p'nei achat p'nei akruv, p'nei ashni p'nei adam. Same thing, haini kruv, haini adam. Indeed it is, but api ravrave, ve api zutra. So, problem with all of this is, How do you know that it's the halal? We might the halal asar bar mischacha, ema baharischacha. Elami beit olam mim gamar. The tiva bayat shabanan melach shama la Hashem shishim amarko esrim rachbo shashim amarkomato. The tiv komat akruv echad eser baama v'chein akruv hasheni. So the Braita points out that Ma'amat Sinai bebeit olavim olamim. The kruvim are b'shlish habayit ein momdim. The Mishkanami, the kruvim b'shlish habayit ein momdim. Okay, let's figure out where that gets us. Mishkan kamahavi esramot, because it says beferish esramot aorech hakerash. So how much is that in tefachim kamahavi shitim pushchi? Tilte kamahavi esrim pushchi. Underneath the kruv, dala asara de'orim ve'kaporet. Pashulu asara. And it says beferush that that is schach, because it says vayuakrim porsech nafayim lemala so chichin bechanfei malakaporet, which means that the Torah is calling schacha lemala mihasar. Ah, but here we have the same problem. Mimayt got finu yilu reshayo kaime dimalahadi reshayo kaime on revach vayakov lemala k'tiv. So maybe midlay tuva. Does it say lemala lemala? So this works out perfectly. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the Amish al Binyan was Shisha Tvachim, which indeed brings us up to 20 Tvachim high to the top of the kruv, the problem is that Shal Kalim was only Chamisha. According to him, it works out like this. Aron Kaporet Kame Avilu, only Tmani Opalga. Parshul Chatzri Opalga. According to him, we should say a sukkah has to be Chatzri Opalga. You're right. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it has to be Halach L'Mashmi Sinai. Yehuch Tagmir L'Otam Rabbi Barash, Yom Rab, Shirin, Chetzitzin, Umechitzin, Halach L'Mashmi Sinai.
The dinim of Mechitzas on it. Many people were left confused. Let's just review what it is that we did and also introduce some of the things to come. We haven't yet derived, but we will today, that there needs to be a certain din of a mechitza in the sukkah. We're taking for granted that when we say that the schach has to be 10 tefachim off of the ground, but what that actually means is that it needs to be a mechitza of 10 tefachim, a dofen of 10 tefachim high. And when we say it can't be more than 20, then it doesn't necessarily mean that the dofen has to go all the way up and so on. And the question is, what exactly constitutes a dofen that is defining the sukkah? In many ways, the din of a mechitza for Shabbos, the din of a mechitza, which is called a dofen for a sukkah, are similar. We're going to be seeing throughout the Masechta ways in which there are special dinim that are the same, technical definitions of a mechitza, and ways in which they are different. And this daf is no exception. One of the things that we learned was a quality which is called the good asik. That means that there's an idea in which a small mechitza is visually raised, halakhically speaking, technically speaking, as if it goes up. Okay, curious concept. Another strange concept that we learned is something that's called dofen akuma. Dofen akuma is a special halakha for a sukkah. It's halakha l'moshe m'sinai. And it means that a straight wall is, again, technically, halakhically imagined as bending in. What difference does that make? It's a very big difference where the sukkah, which is defined as kosher schach, is in the middle of a roof. And there's plenty of nice walls, but they're nowhere near the side. So now here we get to this question. You're in an area that is surrounded by mechitza. You're under schach. Does that equal a sukkah? And the answer is no. It doesn't equal a sukkah. A sukkah is schach that is supported and next to, I shouldn't say supported because that's not true, but it's next to mechitzas that relate to it. Therefore, says the Gemara, even though there are mechitzas all around the room, you have a problem because those mechitzas are not up against the schach. How far can they be and still be viewed as up against the schach? Comes halacha l'moshe m'sinai, which is called dofen akuma. It can be up to 4 amas, but not including 4 amas, away. And how does that work? Why can they be so far away? Because then we view the mechitza as including the area of the roof, so that it's as if it's all wall, except that the horizontal part is viewed in halacha as also being vertical. So since the horizontal part touches the schach, it's as if the vertical wall bent in and got all the way up to the schach. Dofen akum, strange idea. Another concept called lovud, which we introduced. Lovud means that for all intents and purposes, when you are within a certain distance, which is a gear less than 3 tefachim, very small space, the tefach is about your fist. So 3 tefachim is less than 3 tefachim, then for all intents and purposes, we ignore the distance. So let's say that you have a mechitza that's hanging down. The minute it gets to within 3 tefachim, it's as if it's at the ground. Or, the case that we had, you have a correct size of a sukkah. Problem is, that it's not up against the wall on the bottom, because you dug out, you had a little sukkah, it was too small, it wasn't 10 fucking high. You dug out the space for sukkah in the middle, but you didn't dig it all the way up until the wall. So again, you don't have walls, you don't have kosher walls, because the walls are not 10 fucking high. Well, how far can you dig that hole and get up to the wall for the wall to be considered 10 fucking high? Less than 3 tefachim. That was the din of Lovud. Then we had another interesting halacha.
Is he talking to the tzach as well?
No. Nothing to do with the tzach.
Like the wall goes up. Like
yeah, exactly. No, then you would say good asik. You don't even need that. Then it doesn't need it. We'll see. There are many cases where Lovud does count on top as well, but we haven't gotten to them yet. Then we introduced another very interesting idea, which was called diyumdin. Diyumdin, we said, was from the word dual, diu, in Greek, and umdim is amudim. So dual amudim means corner pieces. And over here, it works basically by graphically delineating a space and thereby serving the same purpose as a mechitza. And the halakha allows us to fill in the space so that if you have four corner pieces, there's two places that this halakha applies. One is in Shabbos, where they made a special takana that even though we usually view Rishus HaYakid as requiring full mechitza, but when it comes to the dinim of carrying water out of a well, over there, the area around the well could well be Rishus HaRabim, whereas the well itself is as deep as Rishus HaYakid. All you have to do to turn the area around the well into Rishus HaYakid is put up four corner boards positioned facing each other so that every direction that you look at has an ama on either side. Here is one of the cases where, although the same halacha is applied to sukkah, the size is different. Because when it comes to sukkah, we rely even on a tefa to be the diyumdin. We don't paskin like this, by the way. Cannot make a sukkah made out of diyumdin. However, the Shita in Gemara talks about diyumdin, said that a tefa would be sufficient. Okay. There's another halacha, which is similar to some of these din, which we haven't reached yet, but I want to introduce it now so it isn't confusing later. There's a din of good asik mechitzata that we talked about. We have a mechitzah on the bottom, you lift it up, so to speak, halakhically. There's also a din of good achitz mechitzata, which means when you have a mechitzah that's hanging, and it already is a mechitzah, 10 tefachim high, as opposed to the case I spoke of earlier, where you don't have a 10 tefach high mechitzah, and you want to make a 10 tefachim high by stretching it to the ground, there you need to have lovud. But suppose you have a 10 tefachim high mechitzah that's hanging from the roof, but it's nowhere near the ground. That is something that's called good achit. Once the mechitza begins, you can continue it downward. Again, imaginatively, but halakhically. Technically speaking, you can continue the mechitza downward. So you can have all types of combinations of these halakh. For instance, suppose you take four strings, and you put these strings within less than 3 tefachim of each other. So now Lovud tells you there's no empty space there. Now all of a sudden, between four strings, you've got a whole 10 tefachim high mechitza and more, right? Because as long as they were placed within less than 3 tefachim. Now you take that mechitza and you put it, I mean, it's an invisible mechitza. You have like these four invisible threads. So you've got an invisible mechitza made out of fishing line. You put this invisible mechitza under the roof of the sukkah, and now the whole under part of the sukkah has no mechitza. It doesn't matter, because you stretch that mechitza, so you now have a completely invisible mechitza that completely surrounds your sukkah. It's perfectly kosher. Okay? Now, there's one problem there, which is, as we'll see later, there's an idea of Gideon Bokin book. Which means that there's a problem in certain cases. We have to see whether it applies to that case. That a mechitza that is actually physically open for animals to cross through and cut across that area has a problem of a mechitza, because it doesn't actually prevent entry, which is a separate din. Okay, we'll talk about that later. That's another interesting halacha. But you could certainly many people construct invisible sukkahs. See it all the time. It's like three little things, you know, on the bottom. You don't even notice it. And then it's perfectly kosher mechitza.
Prevent entry.
You don't necessarily have to prevent entry. We'll see which cases we worry about that, which cases we don't. Lovud is considered to basically block that. So if you get lovud at the bottom, or if you put your fishing line mechitza on the bottom, the kosher sukkah that nobody even sees the walls of. Okay. Amazing.
Yeah.
That's true legabe Shabbos as well, except that on Shabbos, in certain conditions, we want to have a mechitza that goes not only in one direction, but is crisscrossed. That's awesome. There are places in Shabbos where we don't even demand crisscross. Like when you have a shayara and things like that, there's all types of kulais and mechitzas. There's another din, which we haven't reached yet, which is called surat ha-petach. And surat ha-petach means that where you put up, again, these are just formal graphic devices. Surat ha-petach means exactly what it says, the shape of a doorway. How do you make a shape of a doorway? This is how we make an eruv around the city. You could take two thin boards, put a string across the top, right over the top. If that matters, take two strings and put a string on top of that. And now you've got something that looks like a door. It's a graphic door. That equals a mechitza in many cases. Again, we'll see how it applies to sukkah. There are places where we can build a sukkah out of it. There's another din of mechitza, which is called pitikra yored v'sotei. Pitikra yored v'sotei means if you have a flat roof, it's not in an angle, and it ends with a slant that continues on behind it, then that roof delineates an area underneath it, which is essentially, in our brains, marked off by the roof. Therefore, the roof creates a mechitza around that face. So the pitikra, the front of the ceiling, or the roofing, yored, comes down, the sotem, and seals. So again, it's very important to realize that the mechitza is a halachic construct. It doesn't necessarily mean an actual thing that you would see as a mechitza. And all of these dinim, you have to get used to the idea of abstracting the concepts rather than trying to actually visualize a physical sukkah. A sukkah is a construct. And we need to imagine what we mean by sach, what we mean by dofen, what we mean by mechitzas. We even spoke about, as we learned the daf, we spoke about that beautiful Reb Chaim, who explains the difference between mechitzas for Shabbos and the dofen of a sukkah. Brilliant insight. Mechitza on Shabbos is meant to delineate a space that's protected from entry. But a mechitza, and therefore it doesn't have to be up against the area that is protected. There's no din of lovewood over there. You hollow out a place that's 10 fucking deep, then you have a kosher rishus hayokid, or a dangerous rishus hayokid, you're going to throw something into it, even though the mechitzas maybe are not near it. But by sukkah, they have to be near it, because you don't need to know, here you need a dofen, not a mechitza, and that's an important difference in words. Yes, it's true, technically speaking, every dofen will act as a mechitza. But the fact that it's called a dofen, which is a wall of a thing, rather than a break between two different locations, is very significant in halakha. So again, all these things, they may sound a little bit strange when you first read them, but once you get used to these concepts, then it becomes very easy to just deal with them, put them together, and you can have all kinds of strange constructs that are combined, like combined invisible things, because they're just ideas. But that combination of ideas works to create the circuit. Okay, so we, all along, were assuming that we've got a need for a sukkah at 10 tefachim high. We never proved the idea of 10 tefachim high. There was, it never said anywhere that the sukkah has to be 10 tefachim high. Now, what's interesting is two questions when we talk about 10 tefachim high. Do we need walls that are 10 tefachim high, or do we need that the schach should be 10 tefachim high? That isn't very well defined. Let's take a look down in the Gemara, and we'll see that there may actually be two different approaches to it. We got up to our daf today's daf hey, and we got up to daf dalan amad beis she'ena gavoa asarat tefachim. So we're like 6 lines from the bottom here. She'ena gavoa asarat tefachim. The next thing the Mishnah said: any sukkah that's not 10 tefachim high is not kosher. Minolan, how do we know that? Itzma, Rav, Rebbe Hanina, Rebbe Yochanan, and Rebbe Chaviva say the following right. Oh, by the way. This is now, Gemara says, by the way, Bekula Seder Moed is a parenthetical con. Bekula Seder Moed, whenever you find that list of names, and it's not in any, it's one of the other Sedarim, it's in Seder Moed, then you have to know that there are those that are Chilufei Rabbi Yochanan Maile Rabbi Yonatan. There are those who take Rabbi Yochanan out of the Chabura, and instead they insert Rabbi Yonatan. Because during Seder Moed, that was the Seder of the Lima that they had had. Not everybody agrees to that, but chiluthi means there's some who do that. Switch it around. Anyway, back to end of parenthetical count. Aron tisha, the kapora teva, harekan asara. Look, the Oren HaBris was an ama v'chetzi. An ama v'chetzi, the ama is 6 tefachim, an ama v'chetzi is 9 tefachim. On top of the Oren HaBris was the kapora, which contained the kruvim and held the kruvim, which covered over the top of the Oren. That kapora was a tefach high, which gives you 10 tefachim for the Aron HaBris. The Shechina, we know, it says fresh in the Pasuk, v'no'adati v'hasham, b'ena kruvim, the Shechina was there on the top of that combined thing. Now, that's point number one, okay? Because it says, v'no'adati l'hasham v'dibarti t'cha me'al ha'kapor. So now we have 2 points. Point number one, how high was that kapor? 10 tefachim. Point number two, the Shechina appeared on top of the kapor. Fine. Point number three, v'tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, mi'olam lo yardar Shechina l'mata, v'lo alum Moshe v'liyo l'morum. You should know that despite your thoughts and beliefs to the contrary, the Shechina never appeared on earth, and Moshe Rabbeinu and Eliyahu HaNavi never went up to the sky. Shenemar, because it says the Pharisee in the Pasuk, Hashamayim, Shamayim, Lashem, the Aretz, Satan, Ibn Adam. So what do we do about all the Pesukim that say that the Shechina came down and all? The Lo Yarda, the Shechina, Lamati, telling me the Shechina never came down. It says the Pharisee. Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai. I mean, why are they I came down to Har Sinai. Oh. That means lemala mi'asara tefachim. I came down, but only up to 10 tefachim. Well, it says v'amdu raglav b'yomahu al har hazeitim. God will stand on that day, the day of the coming of Mashiach. It's on har hazeitim. No, means he stood, but it was 10 tefachim above the ground. V'lo alum Moshe v'liyo l'moron. Yaktiv u'Moshe ala el Elohim. Yeah, Moshe went up to God, but he never got all the way up. It was lemata mi'asara tefachim. 10 tefachim were missing. It says, Vayal Eliyo b'sara shamayim. Eliyo went up in a storm to the sky. Huh? That means that it was lamata me'asara, you see? So, in other words, when it says that the Shechina appeared on top of the Yoren, that's because that's the maximum that the Shechina can do. The closest I can get to you is to the top of the Kapora. We know that that's 10 tefachim high. What would the meaning of that be? The only way to understand it is that 10 tefachim delineates a separate area. Once I know that that's true, then if I know I need to make a mechita, then the mechita to delineate a separate area has to be 10 tefachim high. So it's a given. That, then all of this follows. So Moshe got close to the Shemayim, but it had to have been defined as a somewhat different area. 10 tefachim.
But then if you delineate between two things which are horizontal to each other, then the machine between those two would have to be 10 fucking wide.
Correct, 10 fucking high.
But why? Because you're talking about Hashem coming down, so that verse is a 10 fucking place like that.
Right.
So if you want to delineate something which is horizontal, you've got to flip it. That means 10 fucking wide.
No. Why would you put it?
Because
the idea over here is that something that has 10 tefachim in height differentiation from something else has now been set aside as a separate area. So then the mechitza, which has a height, creates a height differentiation between one area and another. We can no longer mix the two. If the mechitza wouldn't have been 10 tefachim high, so then we just go right over the top sort of thing. It's all mixed. But since on the top of that mechitza, you're now in a completely different space, so that the mechitza now acts to separate the spaces on either side of it because they no longer mix. Right? Well, look, I mean, you can imagine the same thing, basically, in your yard. Once you have a high enough mechitza that prevents entry, in a sense, to the other one, now you feel it's two separate yards. You split it with your neighbor, right? But if you just have a little thing that juts up, you can walk right over it, then you say, well, but it's all one area. You just walk right over it, right? So it means the mechitza works only when it reaches a point at which, on its top, you're going completely out into a different area.
But if we're comparing it to the situation with the stream and what you're going to
I understand what you're saying, but once I can establish that that height creates a difference in area, so then that means if I have something of that height between two areas, there's no way to mix those two areas because how can I get over it? Right? So it has now the height that is necessary to force us into a different space. Once I'm forced into a different space, I can't now combine these two spaces. So it's still based on height. V'aksiv, how can you say that Moshe Rabbeinu never got up? It says, Ma'achez b'nei kisei, pirsheza alav anano. He was holding, so to speak, the kisei hakavod, and God, parsheza lava anano, what is parsheza now? Rabbi Tanchum explained, malamit shepiresh, we're using the word parsheza as a notrikon. So oftentimes we create a word from just an acronym. We take the first letters, the first two letters. So parash means pires, shaddai, miziv, shechinato, the anano alav. God spread his shechina and his cloud over him. Yeah, but that was lamata mihasara. But it says ma'aches b'nei kisei. It says Moshe was holding on to the kisei. How could he hold on to the kisei if there were 10 tefachim between them? Ishtarvu ve'ishtarvu ve'kisei adasarav v'nakatla. The kisei HaKavod extended a leg down for Moshe to hold on to, but the Shechina didn't come down. Okay, all of these things have very, very important Kabbalistic issues discussed in all of the Kabbalah Svarim and so on. You know, it sounds like a big little thing, but you know, obviously it has to do with the extent of the relationship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in reality to the world, and to what extent it's actually a different space. But it expresses itself within the world. I mean, that's a simple explanation, right?
Nice,
you can see that. Okay, so let's now, I'd just like to look at, says the Gemara, the assumptions that you made. You gave me a list of facts. You said the Aron is 9, and the Kavod is 10, and let me look over those facts. Mishlema Aron Tisha. I understand how you know that the Aron was 9 to 9. It says, Asu Aron at Seishitim, Amatayim v'cheti orko, v'amah v'cheti rogbo, v'amah v'cheti kamato. So it says that the Aron was 1.5 amot high, and that equals 9 tefachim. It doesn't say anywhere in the pasuk how large the kaporet was. So how do you know the kaporet was a tefach? Maybe the kaporet was just like this thin covering or something. Or maybe it was much taller. I don't know. Minolam. Ah, that I know because Rabbi Chanina says, Kol hakevim shasa Moshe natna behem Torah midat orkan midat orkan umidat komatan. You'll notice that every single kli that's made in the Mishkan, the Torah said precisely how tall, how wide, how deep. But the kaporet, it only says midat orkan midat orkan. It gives us, because we know the size of the Aron, therefore gives us the width and the breadth of the kaporet. But midat komata lo nitna. For some reason, the Torah did not give us the height of the kaporet. How are we supposed to derive what that height is? So therefore, what you should do is you take the smallest of the kelim, because this is our klal. We're going to discuss the klal again, but we already discussed it once. The klal is, you never have a right. It's Occam's razor. You never have a right to take more than the absolutely minimal assumption, right? So if the minimal assumption of the size of a kli is 1 tefach, you can say, well, but there are other kelim that are 10 tefach. That doesn't matter. You have no right, because you can't prove that you can go beyond that. You can only prove the minimalist assumption. Okay, so the smallest kli that we find in the kelim is by the shulchan, the Torah said, there's a mizgeret. A mizgeret is a border around it, and it says, b'feir shasita lo mizgeret tefach saviv. So that's the smallest shear of anything that was built by Moshe, 1 tefach. So therefore, mala alam tefach, avkan tefach. Same way that's the smallest shear, so the kaporet is also a tefach. I understand. But the miskeret is not a full kli. I mean, the miskeret is just like a small piece that was around the table, but it wasn't the whole table. So maybe you should learn it out of the Kalim Gufayu. Melech mi Kalim Gufayu. Why not learn it out of the Kli itself? No, because tafasta meruba lo tafasta. Tafasta mua tafasta. This is the Gemara's language for Occam's razor. You grab too much, we'll take it away from you. If you grab absolutely the minimal, nobody can take it away from you. But anything beyond that, you're forced to prove. So here too. Okay, prove that we should learn it out of the Kli. We know the Torah means to give you some reference. Okay, so take the smallest reference. The smallest reference is a teva. Well, wait, that's not true. The smallest reference should be the tzitz. The tzitz was tiny, because it had to fit, remember, it had to fit on the Kohen's head, such a way as to allow room for his tefillin, and then above that for the hat that he wore, the mitznefet of the Kohen Gadol. So it was very small. The tzitz was only, and it says in the Braita, Titania, tzitz domek min tas shel zahav, it was just like a thin golden band, rachav shtei etzba'ot, it was only two etzba'ot wide, which is only half of a tefillin. Tefillin being four etzba'ot. So what right did you, if you're telling me, apply Occam's razor, okay, so then I'll take it all the way down to two fucking, why four fucking? Umukat meozen laozen, it would go from one ear, extended from one ear of the coin to the other. Mikatuv alav shnei shitim, there were two lines of writing. Yud-kei, meaning Yud-kei vav-kei, the shame of Hashem was on top. And Kodesh Li was on the bottom. That doesn't make sense. I mean, why would we be reading it backwards? Why would we go from the bottom up? Unless it means, says Tosfos, Kodesh Lamed on the bottom to the right. And then Yud-kei vav-kei on top to the left. So you would still read it in order. It's just that the Shem Hashem would be raised above the level of the line that was secular, so to speak. The Kodesh Li Hashem. Okay. So it said Yud-kei Kodesh Lamed Lamata. Yomer Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Yossi. And again, Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Yossi, who had that famous story of getting into the Vatican. So that was the mice that he got into the Roman treasure house. It was a little bit Vatican-y already, you know. And there's a whole story in which he was going to try to persuade Caesar to drop an edict against the Jews, and he was Miss Paolo. And anyway, it turned out that this shade went and affected the Caesar's daughter, and she went mad, and they were calling doctors, and finally he comes in and he cures her, of course, because that was the whole deal. He made a couple of people. And he said, look, you go into the treasure, anything you want, you take. So while he was looking around, of course, all he wanted was to take the edict and to rip it up. But meanwhile, he saw a lot of the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. We often find him reporting, like we had with him back in Yuma. We had with the Parochas. He saw the Parochas had blood on it. I saw that.
Dirty.
They replaced it every year two times. So Rabbi Eliezer from Yossi says, well, I haven't actually seen the tzitz, you see. And there were no two lines on it. I don't know. It was only one line. It's a Kodesh Lashem, all in one line. So B'shita Achach. Anyway, but getting back to the question. So why not learn it out from the tzitz? Why are you learning it out from the Mizgeret of the Shulchan? Well, because, look, I mean, the Kaporet is a kli, okay? The tzitz is basically jewelry. That's all. It's a decoration for the Kohen Gadol. You can't learn out a kli from, I mean, then what do you say? He's wearing a ring, so let the ring be the size of that. Makes no sense. One thing is a functional kli, and the other thing is just a decoration. So you don't learn out a kli from a taksha kli. So ain't done a kli, me taksha. Okay, fine, very good. So let's learn it out from the zer. Now the zer is basically part of the Oren had a zer, the Shulchan had a zer, the Karazav had a zer. The zer was a crown, meaning it was a raised area of gold, went around the top. And it was there to indicate the Keter. So the Shulchan was the Keter of Malchut, and the Zer on the Mizbeach HaZahav was the Keter of Kuhuna, and the Zer on the Aron HaBris was the Keter of Terah. But it was tiny, it was Mashu. So, I mean, if you say, let's look at a Kli, okay, fine, here, let's look at the Zer of the Kli, and that was much less than Zephyr. So maybe the Kaporet was just a thin little covering, you know, maybe it was a half of an etzvah or something. After all, it's gold. So how do you know you have a right to learn it out from the Mizgeret, which is a tefach? I mean, the Zer isn't innately different than the Mizgeret. No, because you can't learn it from the Omer Mar Zer Mashu. The Zer is only a little bit. No, because done in Kli Mikli, you learn out a Kli from an actual functional Kli. You don't learn out a Kli from something that makes that Kli nice. Heksha Kli. Okay, man, it makes it pretty, but it's not really part of its functionality. Now have you? Because the Mizgeret also wasn't necessary for functionality. So then you should have said the same thing there. So what right do you have to learn the Kaporet from the Mizgeret of the Shulchan if the Mizgeret for the Shulchan was basically a design issue, wasn't a functional issue? Because we're understanding now that the Mizgeret went around the top to create sort of an edge to the Shulchan. Says the Gemara, no, it's not true. The Mizgeret lamataita. The Mizgeret was what the top of the Shulchan rested on. So it was absolutely functional. So in other words, it didn't rest directly on legs. It rested on the Mizgeret that was around the legs to give it better support. So it was part of the functional Shulchan. Underneath the top. Now, wait a minute, says the Gemara. That's only true according to Mandiyoma. If you hold like the Mandiyoma, who understands that the Mizgeret was functional and it was on the bottom, okay, then you're right, and I can learn the Kaporet from the Mizgeret. Here we have the smallest functional piece of a Kli. So the kaporet is learned from that given functional. But how about if you hold like the Mandiyamar who says, Mizgeret Lamalai? The other Mandiyamar says that the Mizgeret actually was decorative. So what are you going to say according to him? Saying Kevin learned out of the Mizgeret. So how do you know now that the kaporet was a tefachai? Now your whole limud falls apart. Because you base the whole thing on the fact that the Shekhinah appears on top of an area that is 10 tefachim, and therefore 10 tefachim must be a different space. Because the Shekhinah doesn't come down to earth. Okay, fine. But now if I can't prove that the Aron kaporet combination was 10 tefachim, everything falls apart. Because now I don't know that it's a different space. That's a problem. Okay, now let's try another approach. Ella, okay, how about this? Danim davar shenat nabo Torah midah. Mi davar shenat nabo Torah midah. V'ayokiyach tzitz v'zer shelonat nabehem Torah midah klal. It's very simple. You just, and it's interesting because this brings out what it was Rabbi Chanina was saying before in the Braita. The kaporet is not just left there without saying anything about it. It tells us how wide it is, it tells us its breadth, but it doesn't say its height. So that means that we're supposed to supply one dimension, right? Okay, so we supply that dimension. But where am I going to learn that out from? From something whose dimensions are supplied. To say now I should take the kaporet and learn it out from things that it doesn't say beferish. Since it doesn't say how big the tzitzit is, we figure that since the tzitzit is supposed to fit where it fits, make it to etzvaot. The zera doesn't say anywhere how big it is. It's no particular size. It's just decorative. Okay, so I'm not going to take something that is not defined and apply it to something that clearly has two well-defined values and is just missing one. So look to something where it's well-defined. The smallest thing that's well-defined is the Mizgeret. Tefach. Okay, that's it. That's the smallest measurement I can use. Certainly not going to use something that has no measurement and throw it in. The Kaporet is this wide and this deep and something high. No, it doesn't work like that. Ravuna says, look, you're right, but you're wrong. Because what's happening is that you all know, as I know, that we learn out the halacha of the mechita from the Aron and the kaporet. That's true. But you're looking at it the wrong way. The way to look at it, the size, is not because we compare it to other kelim, but simply because the Torah refers to the kaporet as having a face. And it says, al pnei ha-kaporet kedma. Facing the kaporet, this we had this back in Yuma, so this is where you're supposed to take the dam. And where do you take the dam of the power? You throw that dam up in the akaporet kema, and then really, the akaporet yazer. Okay. A panim, the word panim, the Torah does not use ever, unless ein panim lachot mitefa. The word panim has to be metaphorically a face. A face has to be a tefa. A face has to be a tefa. I don't know, lots of tiny birds where the face is maybe a half of an tefa. I mean, maybe it refers to an ant's face. I don't know. The ema, maybe it means ka'ape, the bar yuchme. I mean, maybe it means the face of a Tyrannosaurus rex. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it could be a 20-foot-high face, as far as I know. The bar yuchme was this mythical bird, you know, that laid the egg. When it laid the egg, 60 cities were drowned from the waves. That's a pretty big face. Okay, so. Well, again, yeah. Again, tafasta maruba lo tafasta. Because, you prove to me that it's the biggest one. If you take the smallest one, you can say a tefach, but if you take the biggest one, okay, fine, smallest one, an ant. Ah, there you go. Lema api de tziparta. Tziparta is a hummingbird. Take a small, tiny bird, the zutatuva. Om revaka bar Yaakov. No. Rav Huna wasn't saying just a face. Rav Huna was saying the word pnei is used in a particular way in the Torah. Pnei akaporet. He's learning the word pnei as gzeirah shavah. It says over here, pnei akaporet, and it uses the word by Yaakov and Esau. So it says over there, Vayi ach yotzo yatzah Yaakov mi'et pnei Yitzhak aviv. So he just left the face of Yitzhak. So in other words, we're learning it out from a human face. A human face is a tefach. I don't know. What, you're looking for the use of face? I mean, didn't Yaakov say to Esau that kirot pnei Elohim atertaini? So he was referring then to the Malach. I mean, pnei Elohim could be very big. I mean, who says learn it out of pnei Yitzhak aviv? Maybe learn it out of God's face. No, again, tafasta maruba lo tafasta. What right do you have to say? That it's the larger size. Tafasta mu'a tafasta. Okay. We'll go to a smaller place where it says pnei. Let's go to the smallest place. The smallest place is a kruv state. Dichtiv el hakaporet yiyu pnei hakruvim. Ha ha ha. So that means that a kruv has a pnei. Now, the size of a kruv could be tiny. Omer v'acha bar Yaakov. Yeah, it could be, but it isn't. Because gemiri ain't pnei kruvim puti mitefach. We have a Kabbalah that the face of a kruv has to be a tefach. And in fact, that's really the place where Huda learned it from. Not from Pnei Yitzhak. Your question was actually a solution for God. So that Rav Huna, Nami Miyako Gemiri, that's where Rav Huna learned that the Kaporet is a Tefah, because of the Pnei Kruv, and the Pnei a Kaporet. Ah, there we go. So that's all interrelated. But what is a Kruv, anyway? No, it's not Pachas Mitefah. A kruv, it'll turn out, we're getting my kruv. What is a kruv anyway? I mean, you know, what are those little things? I mean, we talked about them, but what are they? Omra vevu, what do you mean? Kruv is the word kiravya, like a child. Ravya is a child. The word ravi means growing. Right? Varov, said Varov in the Haggadah Shal Pesach. He's developing. That's actually a sign of puberty. Varov means that we learn. Visarech kitemech hasadeh, right? That's what we learn. So it means, in other words, just a puberty. It's a little kid, not completely grown, but just entering now his teenage years. So then, if that's the case, and how do we know? Because in Bavel, even today, Korin Lianuka, they call a little kid a ravya. So kiravya would equal growth, like a child. Kiruv, growth. There you go. So that's that cherubic little face where you know that they're really rotten and that is a kruv. Omar le Abaye. Wait, how could that be? So then you're saying a kruv is a human. So then how do you explain the fact that on the chayos of the Merkava, there were four faces on these spiritual beings that carry the Merkava Hashem, so it says Arba Apanim Lechad, Pnei Achad Pnei Kruv. One of them had a kruv face. Pnei Hashini Pnei Adam. I mean, I understand that some people say teenagers aren't human, but I mean, come on. So one of them is a kruv, and one of them is an adam, and then you say the same thing. How could one be kruv and one be an adam? So hainu kruv, hainu adam, is the same thing? No. Api ravravei v'api zutra. One refers to a larger face of a human, a mature face of a human. One is a childish face of a human, which again, this of course is extremely fundamental throughout Kabbalah. This is the idea, which the Arizal's Kabbalah, this becomes ze'er hanpim. Ze'er hanpim means little face. The little face is a completely different type of Hanagas Hashem than the full Hanagas Hashem. the less spheres, the Hanagas that comes from. You look at me like I'm crazy. Okay, fine. Well, whatever.
Yeah,
all right. So the Hanagas that the Ramchal calls the Hanagas HaMishvat is called Ze'er HaNvim, the little face. It's like a Shabbat presence. I'm telling you, the whole daf is basically filled with all types of spiritual issues that we're just, you know, hiding in the element of the Sukkah. Remember that the word Sukkah means what? Who do you know with the name of the Sukkah? Yiska. What does Yiska mean? Shesachta b'ruach hakodesh. So the whole idea of the sukkah is awareness beyond metaphysical awareness, right? Ruach hakodesh. So all of the inyanim that are marumas throughout the Masechta, all of the Kabbalistic issues really are sukkah. So that's why it has a lot to do with it. Because the whole thing is always involved in the Beit HaMikdash, the way that the Shekhinah comes down, the tikkun of Ra, all types of things like that, and the Kedisat HaElam Haba, because they're all hidden within the idea of the Sukkah, which is the place where the Shekhinah is shining. So, but again, on a simple level, I mean, you know, it means just what it says, but just, you know, you shouldn't look at it as just being, you know, Dvarim Shomar B'Kach. It really changes our whole vision of the world, understanding these different. Now, all right, so now we've proven that the sukkah needs to be 10 tefachim high. Problem is, you haven't proven that the inside measurement of the sukkah needs to be 10 tefachim high. How do you know that the schach has to be 10 tefachim above the ground? Maybe you need a wall of 10 tefachim, but the schach would be inside those 10 tefachim. Because all you've done is given me the upper limits to the sukkah. But that the sukkah includes the schach. So ask the Gemara, so now, but wait a minute. Mimai, who is to tell us that the size of the sukkah is the chalola asara bar mischacha, the way the Mishnah claims, that the schach can't be less than 10 tefachim high. So then you would have to prove that the space of the sukkah, excluding the schach, is 10 tefachim. Ema bahari schach, according to your current proof, which is from the kapores and the arim, you don't prove that at all. All you've shown me is that the total height of the sukkah, including the schach, is 10 tefachim. That still doesn't prove the Mishnah's contention. You better go back to the drawing board. Ugh. Okay. Ella, let's try this again. We know it has something to do with the kruvim and the sukkah. We know that. It's got something to do with the kruvim and the arayim, because that's our Kabbalah, basically. Not to mention the fact that the only place the Torah talks about chach other than the sukkah is right there. The kanfei akruvim are seichachin v'kanfeihem. So obviously, the sukkah's got to come from those kruvim. But we've got it wrong, because we haven't been able to prove that it's the inside of it. So we're just trying to zero in on this now. Okay, let's try it like this. Instead of going to the Mishkan, directly to the kruvim relationship to the Oren, let's first define where the Kruvim were. Okay, so let's take a look now in the Beit Olamim. Now, so far we've only talked about the Shekhinah's presence on top of the Oren. But if we can define the Kruvim's wings and the relationship of the Kruvim's wings to the top of the Oren, and we know that the Kruvim's wings are called Tzach, so now we know how high the Tzach is in order to be called Tzachachim, right? So let's take a look at the Beit HaMikdash that Shlomo built, okay? And we'll get back to the Mishnah. So now, in the Beit HaLamim, in the Beit HaMikdash itself, that's where we'll learn about. From 15 there it says, Abayit Asher Bana HaMelech Shlomo LaHashem, the house built by King Shlomo to Hashem was 60 amot in its length, 20 amot wide, and 30 amot high. Now, furthermore, it says over there that he made these kruvim, and he put them in the Indy, they actually stood on the ground. But these komata kruv echad eser bama, each one of the kruvim that he made was 10 amot high. V'chena kruv hashini. Now, the Braita says like this, and this is where, this is the critical piece. The Braita says that ma matino v'beit olamin kruvim b'shmisha bayit en odim, just like in the Beit HaMikdash that Shlomo Melech built, the total height was 30 amot, and the height of the kruv was an enormous 10 amot. That's awfully high. Okay, but its relationship, the proportion of it, is that it's one-third of the height of the building that contained. Okay? All right, now that, let's translate that into the Mishnah. So, too, in the Mishkanami, Kruvim B'Shlisha Bayitim Omdim. Shlomo HaMelech did not change the proportion. He changed the size, but not the proportion. So, if we find that the Kruvim that Shlomo HaMelech made were 1 to 3, then that has to be true in the Mishkan, too. The Torah never says exactly how high the Kruvim are, but we know Shlomo must have figured it out, so we learned it from Shlomo. Okay. So now, let's figure that out. How high was the Mishkan? The whole Mishkan was only 10 amot high. That we know because it says the length of the Keresh, and the Kreshim, of course, were the boards that you put up standing to put the oil over that Mishkan. So it says Beferish, they were Eser Amot Orech HaKeresh. That each one of those boards was 10 Amot high, so that when it was standing, that means the Mishkan was 10 Amot inside of the Mishkan. Okay. Now, then, Kama Habilu, let's just translate that into Tvachim, because we need to deal with Tvachim here, not Amot. Okay, yeah. So translate 10 Amot into Tvachim. There's 6 Tvachim in each Amah, so that's 60. Okay, Kama Habilu, how much does that equal? Shitin Pushri. 60 Tvachim. Okay, one-third of that 60 is what? 20, okay? So, tzlita kamehavi, and one-third of it is what? Esrim pushri. Now, here we go. We now know that the kruvim's height was 20 tvachim. We've just finished proving on the first side of the page that the orain's height with the kaporet is 10 tvachim. Since the kruvim's wings were over the orain, which it says the fairs in the pasuk, there were 10 tvachim between the orain, which is a 10 tvachim, to the top of the kruvim, which is 20. So there you see that the schach, it says, Vayu akruvim, porseik nafayim lamala, sochechin bekanfayim al hakaparet. There we go. Kaya rachmana sechocha, the Torah calls schach. That's what a sukkah is. So the Torah here defines schach. Lamala me'asara. The schach had to be 10 tvachim high. Wait a minute, how do you know that? How do you know that the wings of the kruvim were stretched out above their head? Maybe the wings of the kruvim were stretched out even with the head above their shoulders. So and then you have the same problem. So then all you know is that the inside of the sukkah in total is 10, but that includes the schach. That's the whole point you're trying to make, is that the schach was 10. How do you know that? Now, I still don't understand. So, who says that their wings were up above their head level? Maybe the wings were at the same level as the head. But it says, "Porseik dafayim lamala." Why do you think it says lamala? I mean, I don't know. I understand that they have their wings spread. Obviously, the wings are spread up, but they can't be spread down. Must mean to tell me higher than the natural position, directly horizontal, higher. In other words, it would be above the level of the actual body of the kruv, above the head. So if the head was delineating a 10 tefachim space between the top of the head and the top of the aron, the kaparet, which was underneath it, and directly above that, lamala, were the kanfeihem that were sochachim. So we now know that sochachim requires 10 tefachim to be called tzchach. And that's the only shit that the Torah gave us. So since it says lamala, it must mean that. Maybe lamala means it was vertical or something. I mean, almost. Just enough to be, so maybe it was like another 10 feet above their heads. I don't know how big their wings were. Maybe it means like very high. So you could still say that, no? Midlay tuva, maybe it's extremely high. Well, it doesn't say lamala, lamala, my friend. It says lamala. So there you have, again, the same old question. You can only define it from a minimalist position. Minimalist says above the given measurement. Above the given measurement is directly above 10. So therefore, I now know that directly above 10, we have schar. Of course, all of this is built around the consideration that we've accepted that the orain was 9 tvachim high. The only way it was 9 tvachim high was because the Torah said that it was an amah v'chetzi. So it all comes down to believing that the amah is 6 tvachim. So there's a big problem with that. There were two types of amot that were used commonly. There was the 5 tefach amah and the 6 tefach amah. And unfortunately for us, says the Gemara, hey, Michal Rebbe Meir, the Omar Kol Amot Hayu Beinoniot. According to Rebbe Meir, all of the Amot were the standard mid-Amma. There were also different levels of Amma, depending on how tightly packed the Tefachim were. The standard Amma was 6 Tefachim. But according to Rebbe Yehuda said, only the Amma of the construction was 6 Tefachim. But the Amma of the Kalim, which of course includes the Orain, was only 5 Tefachim. So now you're in trouble. Because now, we're nowhere close to 10 tefachim. We have an amah v'chetzi, 5, 2.5, 7.5. One additional tefach of the kaporos brings us to 8.5. But we still know that the kerubim were 1/3 of the height. So now, instead of 10 tefachim, we've got 11.5 tefachim between the top of the kerubim and the top of the kaporos. So now we should have said in the Mishnah, any sukkah that isn't 11.5 tefachim high is not a kosher sukkah. So ask the Gemara. So my eagle and me, how are you going to work it out now? The orayin and the kaporos together, how much are they? Kamahavi. Mine of a pagim. 8.5. Now, Pasha Vukat Sreva Pagim, you've got another 11.5 tefachim to reach the top of the kerubim for your proof of the sechach. So now what are you going to do? Ema sukkah adavichat Sreva Pagim. Maybe a sukkah is only kosher if it's 11.5 tefachim high. That's a problem. I give up. I give up. I mean, according to Rabbi Meir, we have a proof. Similarly, but what about according to Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda obviously learned the shear of the sechach, meaning to be 10 tefachim high, as a halach of the Meshav Mizinayim. And there's not a basis for it. Hilchata Gemirila. And Rav Chiya Barashi actually said that. On Rav Chiya Barashi, I'm a rab. Shiurim. Shiurim, the sizes of the various things in the Torah. And the chatzitim, the dinim of chatzitza in tefillah. And mechitzim, the size of mechitzot. So the shiurim are the sizes basically what's considered be achilah and so on. We'll see various shiurim. The size of a mechitza is all a local Moshe Sinai. We're going to ask whether we mean the size of the mechitza, dinim of the mechitza. That will come later. And therefore, Rav Yehuda obviously was relying on. Okay. But now it's very interesting. The oracle there points out that it comes out according to this. There's really two separate shiurim in terms of the sukkah. Because if you're learning it from the dinim of the schach, so chachin bechanfehem, so then it's halach in the schach. How high does the schach have to be? But if you're learning it from bechitin, then it's a din in the wall. But that's halach in the mishnah. But that's very different. Because, I mean, why also the mesechta? We're assuming that the din of the sukkah eser is also the halach of the dothan of the sukkah. And that's something that's going to have to stick with us and see, you know, we can work out. I pointed out to you earlier in the Masechta, the interrelationship between the Schach and the Divanate is a very complex one. It has all types of interesting differences in La'alokha, one of the most important being Tasev Elo Menaasi. See, later on, that there's a din that you cannot create a sukkah around Schach. You have to create the Schach in the sukkah. But so if there's a pagam that's a din in the Sichu, so then if I would change something, I'd have to redo this, I'd have to pick it up and let it fall down again. But if it's a tool in the Mechitza, then there's no, may not be a problem in the Sichu percent. We'll see. I mean, again, this is complex. We'll see later on. But we'll keep it in mind. So, we have some fun. Yeah, the next piece starts basically the whole stop, so I'm not going to go further. But tomorrow morning we'll have the easy stop. And this is a lot of fun. Yeah?
Okay, so the question I asked was about the distances between Moshe Rabbeinu and Shemayim and the Shekhinah and Shemayim. It seems to be a question more of distance, that there has to be a distance of 10 fucking in between things to make a real mechitza.
Right, so I'm very glad that he repeated the question, because I really didn't understand yesterday that much what was bothering me. Now the use of the word distance made it clear to me. The halakha that the Gemara was bringing about the Shekhinah not coming down in the 10th fucking, but therefore it's the same size for a mechitza, is not a function of distance at all. The idea of there is the delineation state. Not because it's so far away, therefore it's not considered to be near enough. What we're talking about is how do we delineate the difference of the concept that we have, the spatial, is space just all one big thing, or can it be delineated? So the Gemara is saying that the fact that something that is 10 tefachim apart from something else is delineated as being in a separate area means that a mechitza of 10 tefachim will delineate that distance. As long as you would how distant one thing is from the other. So in other words, something could be right up against the mechitza on one side, right up against the mechitza on the other side, but since the mechitza delineates a separate area, and what creates that delineation?